ye, hear ye, hear ye. The Supreme Court of the State of South Dakota, the Honorable David Gilbertson presiding, is now open for the transaction of any business that may legally come before it.
Good morning. This is the time and the place set for the rules, annual rules hearing of the South Dakota Supreme Court. Record may show that due notice has been given through publication of the proposed rules in the State Bar newsletter. This is a very informal procedure, probably as informal as the Supreme Court does. I will just list them in the order in which we publish them. I will ask if there are any opponents first. If there are no opponents, that might limit the amount of explanation a proponent may wish to give, because we have read the proposals and any attached documents that have been sent to us. We have received a few comments in writing. When we get to that rule, I will announce that those have been received, and then we'll go on with the opponents and then the proponents. So with that, we will proceed. Rule number one, proposal, an amendment to 15.66A. This has been submitted by the State Bar, deals with computation of time. Are there any opponents? Being none, are there any proponents that wish to speak? Okay, going to rule number two. This would amend 15.66D, motion for time. This has been provided, again, by the State Bar. The court would note we have received written comments from James Leach, attorney at law, the firm of Davenport, Evans, Hurwitz, and Smith, and the firm of Bangs McCollum. Are there any opponents at this time? And if you wish to just offer an amendment, I guess technically you're an opponent to the original proceeding. So, no opponents. Any proponents? Okay.
Chief, why don't you ask the bar if they have?
I was going to do that.
Okay.
Mr. Barnett, have you had a chance to look at the written comments from the Bangs firm and from the Davenport firm and from Mr. Leach?
Thank you, Mr. Justice. Chief Justice Tom Barnett, State Bar. I did look at those last night, I've looked at them, but I have no comment on them.
Okay.
In the spirit of the relaxed atmosphere for this kind of proceeding, it appeared to me that some of the comments that came in had some merit. It looked like it may have, like some of them may actually have clarified, yet had been contained or continued the intent of the amendments, and how to sort through that. This is not my area of expertise. The court can do it, or if the court wants to kick it back, not necessarily, or not act on it. If you want further input from the Practice Rules Committee, I'll be glad to go do that. But I think that the justices are probably in every bit as good a shape, if not better, to address those issues.
Okay. Thank you, Mr.
Did this come out of a committee originally?
That proposal came from the Practice Rules Committee and was submitted to the membership last June. And unfortunately, everybody's busy. The comments that came submitted to the court were not brought up on the floor during the debate, or perhaps we would have gone through that process last June.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Barnett. Rule number three, also submitted by the State Bar, proposal would amend 15.66E. Any opponents? Any proponents? Okay. Proposal number four, amendment to 16-1929, submitted by the State Bar. Any opponents? Any proponents? Mr. Barnett.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice. This actually did not come to the State Bar. It came directly from the Disciplinary Board, which acts independent of the State Bar because the Disciplinary Board works for you folks. The history behind this is, in the past, when a complaint would be sent in involving a judge for conduct that predated their appointment or selection, if they were a magistrate judge, if they came in to me as the intake officer under your rules, the way it worked is I took a look at it, and if it predated And if it also looked like I apply the summary judgment standard, but and so it's gonna, it would typically, if it was against a lawyer, it would get circulated. But in about 95% of the time, percent of the cases, I know that the ultimate disposition is going to be a dismissal or perhaps just a caution. And so I would process those, recognizing that the disciplinary board has no power to discipline a sitting judge. And I viewed it from the standpoint of, I'm saving, we know how to do this, we do it every single day, and I'm saving the work of the Judicial Qualifications Commission, who I don't know whether or not they have the power to discipline a judge for a conduct that occurred prior to becoming a judge. But a couple times this last year, I felt very uncomfortable with making that decision. And so I talked with the board, and since ultimately we can't discipline a judge, we debated whether or not, well, if it's simple in a layup and we just go through the process and it's going to get dismissed, fine, let's do that. And then if it looks something more serious, we'll kick it directly over to Judicial Qualifications. But it also occurred to me that something might be going on between a judge and Judicial Qualifications, and if they don't know about what is this innocent thing, they don't have all the tools. Ultimately, we decided that the board and I are uncomfortable with that informal process, and we want to just wash our hands of it. If a complaint comes in against a judge, whether it's existing conduct, which I ship straight over to qualification, or pre-existing, I want to ship it to them and take us out. I don't, and the board does not want us to try to guess whether or not that complaint for prior conduct is going to go any place or has any merit.
Have you happened to talk to Chairman Palmer or the board?
I talked not with Palmer. I did talk with Judge Wilbur. And the reason why I put it here is I don't have any expertise with the rules that operate qualifications. I do have expertise that comes to the disciplinary board. So I go into our powers and say, we don't have that power anymore if this court adopts that.
Was she okay with the proposal?
Yeah.
Okay.
We talk as we need to talk.
All right. Well, they've not provided us any official statement, so I guess they've not opposed it. All right. Thank you, Mr. Barnett. Rule proposal number 5, amendment to 16-1999 from the state bar. You're an opponent?
I am not, Chief Justice.
I couldn't let that slide by. Any opponents? Any proponents?
Mr. Chief Justice, Associate Justices, we had an incident that arose about a year and a half ago where we had a lawyer that this court suspended or disbarred. I can't recall which one it was. And the next thing I know, I get a phone call from the U.S. Attorney's Office after your decision of public discipline was entered, and I get a phone call from the U.S. Attorney's Office saying, ship us all your records or do we have to issue a subpoena? And it was an assistant U.S. attorney, so I called the U.S. attorney and said, are you prepared to come and see the 5 justices of our Supreme Court? Because I am not until 3 of you folks order me to do that. I'm not going to give them to you. The actual U.S. attorney called me and said, excuse the way the message was communicated. How can we resolve this issue? Because Chief Judge Schreier entered an order requiring us to go do an investigation, and I think there was probably a case where it was a resignation by affidavit, so you folks wouldn't have the full body of information. And so so let's just say this. I figured out a way where I could stay in compliance with your rules and at the same time carry out the order of the chief judge, but it occurred to me, and I talked with Chief Judge Schreier, and I said, you know, I don't want to bring a rule that just says anytime the FBI comes up and knocks on my door, I got to turn over the stuff. How do you handle reciprocal discipline? He said, well, much the same way that the Supreme Court does. We enter, you know, I give them an opportunity to accept reciprocal discipline, and if they refuse, then I have to enter an order requiring the FBI to do, or the U.S. Attorney's Office to go do an investigation. And I said, are you comfortable with this? Because I don't, this may occur again in the future. How about if I amend the rule that on your order or the chief judge's order, for purposes of reciprocal discipline, we can release those records? Because I don't want those records to be part of any just general criminal investigation, but I felt that the chief judge, federal judge, for reciprocal purposes, that was a legitimate reason why we would share. And your rule already permits us to share those records if somebody's applying for federal employment. So I thought that providing that takes the pressure off me and allows us to facilitate reciprocal discipline. And that's the genesis, because in that particular case, the lawyer refused to accept the same discipline that you folks, you justices, entered. And that's why I brought it.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Barnett. Number six, would amend 15.65G, proposed by the State Bar Practice Rules Committee. Any opponents? Any proponents? All right.
I just have one question on the subsection 2. Prior to the service, the attorney upon whom service is made has agreed in writing. How did that, if anybody can answer, what was the anticipation of how that would work? Is that then part of a letter? Would that suffice, or does it have to be in the file, or what is it? Did anybody, I guess just the logistics of that I was questioning.
My understanding, Justice Meyer Henry, is that they wanted something in writing. They contemplate in print writing. They contemplate a letterhead in the file saying we are agreeing to this, and that's what the committee contemplated. And that's why it's in there.
All right.
Thank you, Mr. Barnett, for clarifying that. Number seven, proposed by the State Bar, would amend 16.17.8.1. Any opponents? Any proponents?
Well, the genesis of this proposal was, for the first time in the history of the State Bar, we had a Keller objection to activities determined by the bar at the last annual meeting. They objected to the bar opposing initiated Measure 10, and many, many years ago, after Keller versus California was handed down, and I took over in 1989, and I was reading up on the federal cases, the federal courts mandated that if you had to have a procedure in place for a Keller objection, and I suggested to the bar commissioners that we ought to do that. They said, nobody's crazy enough in South Dakota to do a Keller objection. So we're not going to waste our time. Well, in fact, we got one. So we had to draft a procedure. Not all states have an appeal that goes from the state bar to the Supreme Court. Most do not. So when we drafted this, we threw that in as just as an extra layer of, quote, due process. It's come to our attention that there's questionable whether or not we, by in effect adopting a procedure for Keller, can confer jurisdiction on the court for an appeal. We have struggled the last 48 hours with that issue, and it probably is bad precedent if the court decided you had the inherent power to, as proposed under this rule, to do so. And then it becomes Pandora's box. And we'd like you to just table, kill it.
And you're withdrawing it?
We withdraw it, right. Chief Justice, and the court remedy in that situation is they can go to federal court.
Okay. Thank you for the explanation, too, why you're withdrawing it. Number eight, proposal to adopt a new rule regarding adverse inference upon a party's claim. This would affect SDCL 19, 13, 28, 29, and 30. This is proposed by Attorney Michael Wilson from Rapid City. Any opponents? Any proponents that drove here from Rapid City?
Good morning, Mr. Chief Justice.
Good morning, Mr. Wilson.
Thank you for hearing me today. I'll be brief in light of the fact that there are no opponents and hopeful that there aren't some on the bench. But the reason this comes before you today is a case that I handled a few years ago for a woman who had some limited means, and she was defrauded, we thought, by an insurance agent. We sued the agent, and we sued the company that employed the agent. Our story was that we had been cheated and defrauded, and the tortious activity was also criminal. No criminal proceedings were instituted. XYZ Insurance Company had its policy manual that would have suggested that none of these crimes occurred. We had the victim's testimony, the company's policy manual, and I took the deposition of the agent, who took the fifth. I read these statutes after, and I didn't realize they were in the books, but I read these statutes, and it occurred to me that I could not call this man as a witness in this trial. No comment could be made about why I didn't call him as a witness, nor could any comment be made about why he testified in no respects about the transactions that gave rise to the tort and the crime. That's what these statutes say. And the court would be prohibited to tell the jury why David McCrary, the agent, was not called to the witness stand. These three statutes, I thought, were an impediment in the civil case to the search for the truth. The jury would be hampered, as would the litigants, in presenting what really happened in those underlying transactions. So it's the exercise of the privilege ought to be made by a party in open court and give rise to the adverse inference that it ought to, that the adverse inference rule ought to apply like it does all the time. If a party has evidence or documents that they don't produce and they ought to have produced under our well-established adverse inference rules, those ought to apply when a party in a civil case exercises the Fifth Amendment privilege. I can tell you the genesis of these three statutes goes way back, and I brought Wright and Miller with me because it explains it quite thoroughly, and your clerks can guide you to those provisions. And I'll tell you very briefly that these three statutes are generated by rejected Rule 513. Rule 513 was proposed by the Judicial Conference and promulgated by the U.S. Supreme Court. During congressional consideration of these rules, the American Bar Association proposed to amend Rule 513 to make it clear that it did not apply to the party's exercise of the Fifth Amendment privilege. Congress gave no indication of its intended ruling on that motion, and it simply struck Rule 513. It didn't make it to the books. Instead, Rule 501, which I think is 1913-1, is the standard in the federal courts. Several states have adopted Rule 513 verbatim. South Dakota is one of eight of those states that has these rules on the books. Other states have expressly limited the rule's provisions. For example, Alaska, Alabama, Indiana, Maine, New Hampshire, New York, and Wisconsin, and perhaps other states, have expressly modified this rule by providing in their respective statutes that the rule's provisions do not apply to a party in a civil case with respect to this privilege. And I'd ask your favorable consideration to the proposed amendment. I think typically juries do a better job if they have all the facts.
Well, just a question on drafting. Apparently, you're only actually amending 19, 13, 30, even though I see that you've got 28 and 29 listed. Is that right?
No. I think the code commission or whoever drafts these would put a new statute number on it.
Oh.
It was my intention, and I didn't presume to do that job for them.
Okay, so this would maybe be 19, 13, 31 instead of an amendment to 30.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And how close does this follow 513?
513 is SDCL 19, 13, 28, 29, and 30. That is Rule 513.
But we've got it down as
12.
As 12. Somehow the code commission or somebody is.
Oh, I'm sorry. Uniform Rule of Evidence, second, Rule 512, is the same as what I'm referring to as rejected Rule 513.
Okay. All right.
It's a numbering issue.
Okay.
All right.
So okay. This would be them in conformance with the uniform rule?
It would not. The uniform, on our books, we have the uniform rule. Our books is Uniform Rule of Evidence 2nd, Rule 512. I'm proposing an exception to bring the adverse inference rule like other states have done and like the American Bar Association wanted to do many years ago when this thing first percolated up through the process.
Okay. Okay. Any other questions for Mr. Wilson? If not, thank you for coming.
Thank you.
All right. Proposal number 9 is a proposal for a new, presumably, rule, not amending an existing one. This is proposed by the South Dakota Network Against Family Violence and Sexual Assault. The court has received written comment from the Department of Social Services and also the Children's Home Society. Are there any opponents for this, against this rule? Mr. Todd.
Thank you, Chief Justice, Associates. I don't need to reiterate what's in my written comments, but just to say specifically again that we're not opposed to any standards, but we want to make sure that those standards don't somehow interfere with the operation of the Department of Social Services and its normal operation of home studies and placement of children, which are administered and guided by other statutes. I'm available to comment on the suggested amendment. If you want me to, I could.
Question first, do you do those in-house?
Not all of them. We actually, Children's Home does some of those for us. We contract with them to do, and they would fall under what's defined as a child placement agency under 25614.
All right. So you apparently have some kind of internal standards of who's going to be doing these for you folks.
That's correct.
All right. Yeah, I'd like you to have you comment on the proposal.
Okay. The reason we suggested to insert the CHINS reference, 26-8B, is because when children are placed with the Department of Corrections under a CHINS process, there are occasions when the Department of Corrections wants to ultimately place those children or at a later date place those children with a home that's licensed by the Department of Social Services, foster homes or facilities. And so the home studies would have been conducted by the Department of Social Services or through a child placement agency under our contract with us. And so I don't know if it was an inadvertence or if it was intentional, but the original draft excluded out 26-8A and 26-8C, but didn't include 26-8B, and I believe that should also be included to fit within that mold. And then we also suggest that the exemption should include Title 25-6. Excuse me, Chapter 25-6. That's the adoption process, the domestic relations the chapter. And as indicated earlier, 25-6-9.1 specifically provides a home study process by child placement agencies and the Department of Social Services. And there's some standard processes in that chapter. And so I think it would be appropriate to exclude that process.
All right. Do you have any general, and this is maybe an unfair question, and if you can't answer it, that's just fine. My concern is in a proposal like this, are these people available statewide, or are we setting up for the rural areas one more barrier to getting a decree from a judge? Can I find these folks in Haakon County,
mm-hmm.
or Roberts County, or Hanson County? Do you know? If you don't know, I mean,
I guess I'm not sure I totally track your question.
Well, it's the ongoing problem the circuit judge faces who serves a rural area. The professional services in rural areas are oftentimes not available.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I'm asking. Are they available?
And I don't know how much service area it will cover. And we don't have any problem with private adoption somehow trying to have a a custody evaluators fit a standard to meet that, but I guess we just want to make sure that when children are in our care or care of the state, somehow we aren't required to somehow go out and find a evaluator that fits the statute.
Maybe my question wasn't as articulate.
I'm sorry.
I'm asking outside of the context of DSS.
Okay.
Two private people involved where this rule would apply. Are we mandating something in the rural areas that doesn't exist?
Having practiced in the private
area
for a while, I don't want to sound overly negative, but I would think that, yes, that would be a strain on the court to find those evaluators in those Dewey counties, Walworth counties, et cetera. But I'm not sure I'm here to discuss that or represent that issue.
I understand that. Okay. Anything else for Mr.
That's
Tass?
All.
So I understand. Some of the people that you would use in the department to give the recommendation to the court would not necessarily fit into 1, 2, 3, and 4. Is that what you're saying?
That's correct. I mean, they may.
You are confident or use people that aren't necessarily licensed professionals, family therapists, psychology licensed, and social workers. Is that right?
Technically, yes. I mean, often they are qualified under the same processes, but may not always be.
Okay. Now, just give me an idea who you might use that would not be in one of these.
Probably one of our biggest users are Children's Home, both in Sioux Falls and Rapid.
They would not necessarily.
Well, I believe that they have people on staff that would qualify, but whether the whole staff does and whether their executive director who signs off on those or their designee would, and so would somehow we catch a snag in there.
Okay.
Anything
Thank
else?
You.
Anything else from Mr. Todd?
That's all I have. Thank you much.
Okay, before we ask
you. So I understand your oral presentation today, you didn't change anything from your written submission, right? You stand by your written.
I stand by my written. I attempting to explain it enough so it made sense and maybe thank you
Mr. Todd. Any other opponents or people who think this ought to be amended? If not, any proponents?
Good morning, Chief Justice. I'm Krista Herring-Graber. I'm the Executive Director of the South Dakota Network Against Family Violence and Sexual Assault. And I'm here today with the proposed rule. The history a little bit behind the proposed rule, I've actually worked in the area of domestic violence and sexual assault for the past 22 years in the state of South Dakota. And for the last 9.5 years, I've been with the South Dakota Network Against Family Violence and Sexual Assault. I work with shelters and crisis centers and many other professionals across the state of South Dakota dealing with the issues of domestic violence and sexual assault, and frequently have been contacted by advocates and others and also victims of domestic violence specifically that are going through child custody situations. And sometimes I'm contacted during the child custody process either by the attorney or by the victim that's going through that process. And sometimes I'm contacted after the decision is made about child custody and told they're contacting me to share that they were unhappy with the home study evaluation and how it was conducted. And in 2006, I think I was here asking for standards at a rules hearing with survivors of domestic violence that were sharing their experiences with their child custody evaluations or home study evaluations. So ultimately, we would like to have standards in place that would offer more consistency to make sure that it's a fair process and the decision of the best interest of the children, clearly. But today, I'm here with the proposed rule, just asking for set qualifications. So there would be ability to have some oversight for the professionals that are conducting the child custody evaluations. ultimately, we would like to then be able to approach these four groups and ask if we could find some consistent standards. But at this point, we're just asking for the four existing boards in the state of South Dakota to be able to have some oversight for the current child custody evaluations that are occurring in the state. Since I do not do the child custody evaluations myself, it's difficult for me to be able to answer any direct questions about home study or child custody evaluations being conducted in the state of South Dakota currently. But Judy Zimbelman is here to testify as a proponent who does home study evaluations and has for many years across the state of South Dakota. So she may be able to ask more specific questions, but I would entertain any questions that you would have for me now.
Do you know who you are eliminating here?
I am not actually aware that we are eliminating really anyone.
So then why do we need the rule?
So we know that there are the existing boards, that there are oversight. I cannot tell you specifically if there are any people that are conducting home studies that are not licensed by one of the existing boards.
Even without this rule, though, the reason you're requesting it is so that you can go to each of these oversight groups. There's nothing to prevent you from doing that right now, is there?
There is not, and I have talked with some of them, actually. There is not.
Okay. All right. And I guess there's no other questions, so thank you.
Thank you.
Other proponents? Anybody else want to speak on behalf of this?
Good morning, Chief Justice.
Good morning.
I wasn't sure if I was supposed to answer questions or just come and talk.
So. And your name and who you were?
Judy Zimbelman. And I conduct custody evaluations throughout the state, primarily in the Sioux Falls area.
Just as an observation to begin with, in my 10 years as a trial judge, I saw some of these home studies that were, I would have to label as awful. And so I understand why you're bringing it. But the first question is the same question I proposed to Mr. Todd. I came from a rural area. Are these people, the last thing I want to do if we approve this is mandate a requirement that can't be met in rural areas of South Dakota. Is this going to create difficulties in the Fultons, the Gettysburgs, the Haakon County areas, the rural areas of the state?
I can't speak as much to the west side of the state as I can on the east side. In the rural areas on the east side, I travel frequently, and I'm ordered by the court often in different counties on the east side of the state, and so I travel and conduct evaluations there. I know other people that that do conduct custody evaluations in Sioux Falls. Other evaluators also do travel. So I don't think it poses problems in that area. I don't know about the west side if they have difficulty finding people to do those or not. In the Peary area, I've been asked frequently to come to this area.
Okay. Second question I have then is most of the divorces I had come in front of me as a circuit judge, they couldn't even afford the filing fee to file the divorce. By raising the ante on this type of situation, are we creating a financial burden on people who are in the courts that they can't afford?
I think the cost continues to be a problem, and that I don't know that we have solved that problem. I don't know that changing this would raise the cost. I don't see how it would affect the cost of the evaluation.
Oh, all right. Okay. Any other questions?
Are there people who are doing evaluations now in South Dakota who you consider to be unqualified?
The people that I'm aware of on the east side of the state, primarily in Sioux Falls, I consider to be qualified and I believe are licensed within the groups that we were referring to. I'm not aware of the other part of the state if there are people that are doing them. What I have heard, I guess rumor would be the best way to describe it, is that sometimes it's difficult to find someone to conduct the evaluation. So then people are asked to do evaluations that aren't qualified.
I've heard of, I'm from the western part of the state, and my wife did evaluations for years like this. She doesn't do them anymore, but I have heard of mediators who are mediating child custody, and they're qualified mediators, but then they're asked to go ahead and do a custody evaluation, and I think there's been a few instances where that's happened, where, you know, they're probably not qualified to do an evaluation, but they are qualified to mediate. I've heard of those kinds of things, but I can't give you a... I was a circuit judge for 10 years, too, and I don't remember this being a problem because, you know, if a person came in who was unqualified, we didn't accept their opinions.
What you're describing would be a conflict of interest. The problem, I think, again, in the rural areas is that if somebody would be mediating and then it would end up being a custody evaluation would be needed, we need to then have another professional do that.
Absolute conflict of interest.
Okay, any further questions? If not, thank you. Any further proponents? Out of the blue, Mr. Wilson, do you do any domestic relations practice in Western South Dakota?
No.
Okay. You look like a likely target, so I thought I'd ask. Any further comments? If not, the court will be in recess. Thank you.